Welcome back, Fanchies. We are wrapping up Banshee Episode 5, A Little Late to Grow a Pair. Yes, that's you, Brock. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome back, Fanchies and AfterBuzzers. My name is Oriana, and you can find me on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo and on Instagram at Oriana Leo. I remembered!
Yeah.
I'm your host this evening, and my co-host is Isaac Johnson. Say hello to the people.
Hello, people. You can follow me on Twitter at Isaac Johnson or Instagram, The Isaac Johnson.
Wow. Well, yeah. The Isaac Johnson is sitting next to me.
Well, The Isaac Johnson, I had to use that Instagram name because someone already took Isaac Johnson. Damn. So, sadly.
Now, Fanchies and AfterBuzzers, we've got Hoon Lee calling in very shortly. Yeah. So we will be interviewing him. Until then, overall thoughts, feelings about this episode?
I love this show. I'm just increasingly just like, why does this have to end? But I love the moment with Kurt and Watts there. That was really, really cool. Obviously, we're going to get really deep into, like, Job's story, but, man, that moment between him and Hood was, oh, one for the ages for me. And also, I thought the growing a pair was possibly Brock, but also Kurt, because he certainly grew a pair.
Yep.
And, obviously, if you're watching this, hopefully you've seen the episode. Spoilers, Watts is gone.
Yeah. Oh. So, for Calvin, it's not too late to grow a pair, right?
He grew a pair.
The only person that I think is too late to grow a pair is Brock, because now he's having this freaking, what do you call it, press conference that he's never had.
Okay, sure.
So I'm like, four girls are dead. I think that you, Brock, are the one.
Oh, it could be a dual thing there.
Well, it was said to Calvin, but ultimately
it was said to Calvin.
He did have it.
Yeah, for both of them. What did you, like, for overall, like, in the episode, what'd you like?
I was really, really upset by the country murder with the tree.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was brutal.
That was brutal. That was really upsetting. I skipped over it the second time I watched it because I just couldn't handle it.
It's a banshee.
But overall, I just feel like the plot's moving forward. We're learning more and more. We're getting closer. And I'm really suspicious of Deputy Cruz. So it looks like we've got Mr. Hoon Lee on the line. Hoon, are you there?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, great. Welcome back to AfterBuzz.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. What an episode.
I texted to Oriana earlier today when she said you were calling in. I said, Hoon Ray.
So funny.
That's a new one. I actually have never heard that
Hoon Ray.
I made it up myself.
Real talent here on AfterBuzz.
Good for you.
Yeah, I know. Thank you so much.
So this episode, Hoon, I mean, we keep getting more and more insight into the torture of Job. And this specific hanging scene is so intense.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what it was like for you as a person filming and also sort of the inhabitants of Job during that time?
Sure. I mean, in terms of filming the actual torture scenes, you know, everyone on set is incredibly mindful, trying to keep you safe, trying to keep you in a healthy place, because as you can imagine, it's not the sort of thing where there's a huge amount of actual danger, but the mental state that you try to put yourself in can sort of lead to a sort of hysteria. I think you kind of let it get to you.
Yeah.
So the entire crew, I mean, really the entire crew, I think, really went out of their way to just make sure that I knew that they were being as cautious as could be, that they were taking extra precautions where need be. The stunt team, you know, that always has my back. They were, you know, very much on full alert all the time. And as I said, a lot of these things are not really dangerous things. It's just that if something were to go wrong, for whatever reason, then, you know, you're in kind of a vulnerable position.
But that was so you hanging.
Yeah.
Right. Did you do all that whole hanging stunt yourself?
That's my question.
Yeah.
It looked like when he kicks the thing out, which was a nice moment, or like he's sort of giving up at that point. It seems like it looked like you were really hanging there. How did they do that without you actually hanging?
We did a lot of testing. You know, it's a sort of thing where you kind of just have to try it, and the stunt guys.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
They did as much testing on their own as possible before they needed to try it out on me. The harnessing has to be pretty specific because you don't want any slack in there just because your own body weight is going to create tension points and things like that. So they just try to get it as snug as possible so that the weight is as evenly distributed as possible. And in that particular moment, there was that's an interesting place to be because Job is at a place where he's actually taking a very big gamble. He asks Hightower, why haven't you killed me yet?
Right.
And he's at this place where he has nothing to lose. And so he's betting that he needs him alive for some reason at this point.
Sure. Yeah.
And if he doesn't, if he's wrong on that, he's okay being wrong. And that's sort of
absolutely. Okay. I liked that it was kind of the ultimate F you to Hightower that you had lasted.
Right,
Job had lasted 28 hours. It was a record, and yet this is going to be the moment that he kicks it. You know, in his face.
Yeah. It becomes this sort of question to think about for the character and the actor, which is, if you're in a situation where you don't know why you're being kept, you don't know that's I think probably the thing I tried to locus in on as the most maddening aspect is you just don't know why for anything.
And the only answer he gives you is that he's a sicko and he enjoys it.
Right. Yeah. And it's, which is a terrible answer, but also, that's the sort of thing where, I imagine personally, and from what reading I've done on it, that sort of thing is the thing that starts to bend your mind,
Right.
Just having no answers, and especially for a character that always tries to have the answer and has equipped himself to have the answer at his fingertips all the time.
Yeah. I just want to say that you're doing like an amazing job of still like this is. I mean, we know Job. He's quippy, he's sassy. We have a lot of fun stuff, and you're still him, but a very broken version of him. It's really amazing to see. Can you talk about like how you're doing that? I suppose.
I don't think that. I mean, I think that everyone in the show, the writers, all of the actors and the cast, and down to wardrobe and hair and makeup, everybody, we work hard to sort of give the characters as much context as we can, partially because we know we're often not going to have a lot of time to explain those things. There's an explosion that needs tending to, for things like that. And so we try to do a lot of homework on our own, and I think that trying to be conscientious about that as a group effort means that hopefully the characters have a sort of dimension to them in your mind, that you have a sense of what they are like in different situations, what they're like in different contexts. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel like, we knew going into this season that Job was going to be in a very, very different context than he'd ever been in before.
Mm-hmm.
But we also felt confident that we had laid groundwork to show a different dimension of the same person, as opposed to scrapping everything and kind of showing a radically different character that people would have to become reacquainted with.
And that's why it works so well. That's why we feel so much for Job. And let's talk.
Really, the model for that. I'm sorry. Really, the model for that is Ant's characters. It's Lucas, because when you see Lucas, he is he's an unknown quantity. He's a variable,
right.
And you only learn things about him sort of in reverse order. You know, mm-hmm. as he's going forward as the sheriff, you learn more about his past at the same time.
Sure.
And I know that Ant, you know, was very, very diligent about trying to put all of those pieces together in real time, which is not an easy thing to do,
mm-hmm.
In order to try to create a sense of continuity, almost in retrospect. You know, like you'd have to be able to. He didn't necessarily know what was coming in a subsequent season, but trying to sort of set up the foundation that would support any number of different moves mm-hmm. that might be coming our way.
Thanks for the easy segue, Hoon, because I love to talk about
the
bromance, the moment. But first, before yeah. then, I would like to just mention that Carrie giving Job a list of chores is such a mama, like, amazing thing to do. No free yeah. lunches, and yeah. knowing that it'll get him out of his head if he has some, like, manual labor to do.
Yeah.
And Job's doing the manual labor.
Except for windows.
Not be windows. When Hood shows up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, for one thing, you know, I've talked about the relationship with Carrie/Anna with Ivana quite a bit, and one of the things that is kind of true, I think, about these characters is that they have a very specific way of interacting, and just as Lucas and Job have a very special relationship, mm-hmm. Carrie and Job also have a special relationship. It just happens to be a prickly one,
right?
Right.
And you know, the way I always thought of it was that Job doesn't have a lot of people in his life, and so the people that he's close to, it almost doesn't matter whether he likes them or not.
Okay.
It's there's a recognition that they are of a kind.
Yeah, that, totally.
You know, that there's these people that he'll, you know, go to battle with, and for, and then there's everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and it's a very small
tribe. Yeah.
And so there's a sense to me that what I thought she was great about that was that, you know, that I think that giving the chores to Job was a little bit like giving him something to be upset about with her, you know, which is a
right.
part of their dynamic.
Right.
You know? In some ways, it's like getting him angry at her is part of being normal.
Right. It's part of his routine.
Part of bringing him back,
yes.
yeah. So we see
right,
we
you know.
See this mea culpa. I didn't think, I mean, I guess we were waiting for it, of Lucas Hood really apologizing, coming to see Job after Sugar is like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was really, I didn't know that we were going to get those words out of his mouth.
Me
I'm
neither.
Sorry. Also,
right,
to,
right.
to feel the, you know, that you're sort of relating to him in a way that he was in, I guess, prison for 15 years. I forgot that it was that long, mm-hmm. but... that, you know, you're like, it almost seemed like you were saying, like, you could blame me for that too.
That is exactly what he was saying.
But I'm
no?
not,
yeah.
But I'm not blaming
yeah.
you for giving up on looking for me. Is that pretty much where he's at?
Well, I always thought about this, you know, that was a scene that everybody, you know, came together on and really tried to work through, because we knew that there was a lot of potential in that scene, because a lot could be said and a lot could be left unsaid.
Right.
And those things would sort of frame where we were and also start to set up where we were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, if some sort of conversation doesn't happen between these two, this becomes sort of an albatross for everybody for the rest of the season.
Sure.
Which is a way to go, but it means that you're kind of making that choice.
Sure.
Now there's a pause there in your performance specifically, and you're holding a rag, and for a second I think you're going to lose it and you're going to like completely like punch Lucas in the face. There's this moment,
right.
there's a pregnant pause. For you,
right, right.
are you comfortable sharing with that what that was like for you as Job?
Yeah, I mean, there's, I think that what's tough is that in a weird way, I feel like I'm reminded of this. I'm reminded of Goodfellas when they go to prison.
Best movie ever.
And Ray Liotta kind of just says, like, you know, when you go away, you go away, you know, and that's just part of it. And I always had that in my mind for sort of the justification for, well, why didn't Joe bust Lucas out?
Mm. Right.
There's a sense of, you know, you lay low when the heat is on. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a recognition in that's mostly, I think, in the sort of straightforward confession or apology that takes place, or the reconciliation that takes place. There's a recognition that both of their situations were more extreme than they anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These were exceptional sorts of trials that they went through.
Right.
And that sort of keeping score was essentially not really what they were about, mm-hmm. and not really what they were going to do.
Yeah. I think that can only really
come from sort of an acknowledgement of you know, the relationship, the history, and sort of the and the need to honor those things.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice, because I have been waiting for these two characters to get together and talk, and wondering, like, well, are you just going to be upset at him? It wouldn't be that surprising if you were upset at him, but just really, it just seemed like a forgiveness. And I specifically like the line, I'm going to mess it up, but it's something like, he's like, well, that's one way to say it. And you ask him, well, what other way is there to say it? It's almost like, well, you have to say something.
right. Yeah, I think the, you know, it's a very brave moment for Lucas and for Ant, because all through the whole series, Job, Brock, and others, and Anna, they've all kind of said to him in some way or another that you're trouble.
You know? Mm-hmm.
That you are making trouble. And for the character to not only see it and own up to it himself, but to bring it to somebody else, and in fact to bring it to someone who has his back, but is, you know, arguably the most blatantly judgmental person in the
yeah.
You know, that is an indication of, you know, the sort of evolution that the character is experiencing, in my opinion. I mean, Ant would obviously be able to speak to that.
I was definitely moved by it, because I know Lucas Hood kind of represents that person that never takes responsibility for themselves, like always leaving a mess everywhere they go, never taking responsibility. This is obviously on a huge level, but to get the apology, like, I felt better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I felt so much better after. Great. It was like, thanks for taking responsibility for, like, one thing to someone's face. Like,
right,
I mean, he's
right.
been doing a lot of that this season. He has, he said he's sorry to Carrie for everything and, you know, all that. Now, we see Job, the symbolic shave. We've already seen Hood's shave.
Yeah, I was really glad to see it. It was almost like him putting himself back together there by removing a lot of things, I guess.
How was that for you? How long did it take you to grow out all that hair and then to get to shave it off on camera?
I think I was growing it out for several months, and I haven't had hair for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a beard.
Did it make you want to take selfies just to capture the moment?
I'm sorry, what?
Did it make you want to take selfies just to capture it for future reference?
No. I mean, I thought it would be great, because I was like, there was a sense of relief for me, which I thought was an interesting color for Job to have. Because the way I seen Job's affects myself in the past was always that, you know, it's not that there's a stripping away for him in order to create a blank canvas that he can paint upon.
Sure.
Yes, his shaved canvas.
This idea that he's somehow trapped in this affect that speaks very clearly to his time in prison, his time being imprisoned. To be able to strip that away is not just stripping away or not just disempowering that time, but also potentially allowing himself the freedom to recreate himself again.
And wiping the slate clean, the tabula rasa, kind of.
Right, right. And I think that that's an interesting thing, because it's not as easy as doing that.
Of course.
Sure.
But the ritual itself has meaning. You know, the thing itself is a step.
Totally.
But it was just a huge relief for me, and I think for everybody.
Sure.
No one in the crew was liking that look.
No.
100% in agreement.
I mean, obviously, like, with all the hair and the beard, is like a great way to just visually take the audience there to, like, that he is a different person, let alone the performance. But it just feels like we're getting him back, hopefully. It's really like
it's really
painful to watch him, like, wake up from these, like, nightmares and then try to put himself together real quick. I'm just like, and also that conversation, sorry, I'm just like all over the place, but that conversation, like, I loved it so much. I mean, no, we've been talking exhaustively about it, but just there wasn't a lot said, but there was a lot said.
Yes.
That's all.
So, you know what? I do think it's effective already in this episode, the shaving, right? Because am I right with my timing that Deputy Cruz comes snooping around after the shave? Or is it before?
Oh, that was before.
Oh, before. Okay, well, anyways, Deputy Cruz comes around and we get a little bit of that Job sense of humor, levity, you know, of asking her all these questions, calling her out.
Yeah, he parked her a long way away from the game.
Yeah.
Why'd you leave your car so far?
Mm-hmm. So that made me think that that information will get back to Carrie, probably. Isaac, thoughts?
I think so. Do we still have you, Hoon?
Hoon, are you still there? Yes?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, we're going to carry on with our cast. Hoon, if you're still there and you want to join in, you just let us know. But we're going to carry on with our breakdown.
Hello?
Yes, oh,
there
hi!
You are. There you are.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. So we're going to carry on with the rest of our breakdown. You're welcome to stay on the phone with us for another half hour and chime in as you see, or we can let you go, whatever you prefer.
Okay, great.
Okay.
So we're going to hang up for a little bit.
All right. We're going to hang on. So I would just like to toot my own horn, because did I not call that Hood's place was going to burn?
I don't recall.
I recall. I wish we could do a rewind right now.
Maybe
there's a lot
later.
Of fires in Banshee, especially this season. And I said, I think this one might burn. It's an old wood building.
Okay. Yeah, I do remember you saying that. My specific thought was just that, like, Kai is going to find out and not be happy, which he was not happy.
Well, I love in this episode, we have so many themes. This whole season, we have so many themes over and over again. Like, we saw last episode, we had Job and Lucas both in their relative cells, whether it's their home or a prison cell.
Right.
And then we see again Proctor and Hood showdown again. Like, kill me. I'm going to kill you. Okay, go ahead. Do it. All right, I won't. Let's just work together. Cool.
Yeah.
We've seen this before. It's familiar. I think they have a mutual respect on some level, you know. And again, I think Lucas doesn't have much to lose. And he's even more reckless than usual. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that. It was nice to see him, you know, I could kill you right now.
Right.
Get on with it.
Yeah.
Then. That's who he's been the whole time. Like, if you're going to do it. Oh, you're not going to? Okay, great.
So we see that Proctor's upset about the pregnancy, obviously.
Does he know specifically?
Well, he has to know because he's the mayor. He's got all the information.
Okay.
And that's what made Hood a prime suspect with the blood in the car. So we find out that Rebecca was skimming cash from the strip club, and this is a little information from 4 months ago that we know.
Right.
The relationship between Kai and Rebecca was definitely strained.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting that she's, you know, when she's there in the vault and they start talking, he's like, look, just because you skim money doesn't mean make it yours. And she's like, I earned every penny of it. And I'm like, why does she feel so entitled to...
I don't know.
To what she's taken that isn't hers. I mean, I guess, like, I mean, her uncle's a criminal, so that's kind of a thing. But
Hoon,
like,
what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing that's interesting, you know, when you talk about the both of them standing in front of Hood's burning house, you know, Rebecca's death is not just the death of this character, which we were all very, very sad about.
Right.
But happy when we found out she was going to be, you know,
on the
threaded
whole
through
season.
The season.
Yeah, yeah.
As part of the story. But, yeah, when we found out, we were like, what?
Yeah.
But, But, you know, she also is some, in this particular case, in this particular season, because she mostly appears in flashback in this way, she only appears in flashback in this way, you know, she's also a proxy for these other things, right? She's becomes a sort of symbol and icon for both Kai and for Lucas, in particular. And so weirdly, she becomes the sort of the thing that bridges them, you know, sort of bonds them. Like, she's his chance at redemption. And unwittingly to himself, he didn't even know that she was actually her. She became sort of his best chance at family, weirdly.
Yeah, totally.
By having a child. And in many ways, she's the same thing for Kai.
Yeah.
Sort of a chance at redemption, sort of a closest thing he has to family. And so I feel like they found a way to sort of use this event to sort of illustrate the tie that still connects them.
And speaking
that still connects them through these things.
Of Rebecca, we see that her family and the townspeople are not going to give up so easily about Rebecca's body. And they they come and they demand from Proctor that they get Rebecca's
something,
which is really cute.
Immediately,
I mean,
I like him throwing back in their face, like, you shouldn't have shunned her.
Yeah,
like, basically, you guys kicked her out. I took her in. I was taking care of her. What were you doing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hypocrisy of the whole situation.
I mean, she's always been this proxy for Kai and his relationship with the Amish. But but you know, when she talks about skimming money and, you know, that sort of thing, you know, again, it's like, we have these scenes of her with Lucas, and Lucas telling her kind of like, stay away, I'm not good news, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, kind of trying to steer her in his own way towards something better. And Kai was in his own way doing that as well, like taking her in and trying to give her a path, you know? And so there's this, it's a very twisted sort of, it sort of illustrates the absence of family, right? The absence of,
Of
parents and the absence of families and what happens in that vacuum as that generation then seeks to steer the next generation.
Right.
The shunning of yelling to the Amish about you shouldn't have shunned her is him, in fact, saying, you shouldn't have shunned me either. You know, like,
it's the same thing.
Well, and it's so hypocritical, and it's the thing that most people don't appreciate about religious, you know, followings is it's, you know, here, now it's important to keep the traditions, and now it's important to pay respects to Rebecca, but it wasn't important before when she was alive. And now, you know, discussing that is great performance by Samantha Worthen this season also as Miriam Bowman.
Yeah.
Really, I feel awesome for her.
Totally do. Yeah. I'm still wondering though, like, where does she get this sense of entitlement from? Like,
Rebecca?
Rebecca. Like, she's just, you
too
know,
bad
that
we don't have Lily Simmons in.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe we'll have her in a couple episodes. That'd be awesome. But, like, I don't know. She's just like, I earned every penny of this money. And it's like, you know, just because you stole it from me doesn't make it yours.
Yeah. Well, there could be something going on that we don't know about that could be revealed.
I mean, I think they're taking us somewhere.
She feels taken for granted, I feel like. But again, what value has she brought other than creating a lot of problems?
Yeah.
I don't know. But then again, she was raised in one warped world, goes to another warped world. Maybe she's just warped.
Could be. Sticks a gun in her uncle's face, and he's definitely... But that's the thing, is like, she does these like sort of tough acts, and she's putting the gun in the bank teller's face and now in his face, and he knows that she's not made of the kind of thing to do that, at least to him.
Yeah, and he calls her out on it.
Yeah.
All the time. Now, speaking of Proctor, we've got this whole Watts neo-Nazi thing going on, right?
And we had that brutal scene of the dude on the tree. What was his name?
So Proctor.
Pony Joe.
There it was.
Oh, poor Pony Joe. So
I don't feel that bad for him.
You don't?
No.
Okay.
He's neo-Nazi.
Okay.
What's coming to him?
Well, so essentially, we know that Proctor is into the cartel, right? And they've got to bring a bunch of business. He's going to Watts demanding that they increase production. Watts knows that he's in business with cartel, which goes against his own personal value system.
Yeah, except for that he loves money.
Right. Money first.
Money
is God.
the race war, apparently.
Apparently. But when they have that scene out in the woods, what did you think about that?
I love seeing Kurt's reaction to, or not Kurt, sorry, but Calvin's mm-hmm. reaction to it.
Great performance.
Yeah. And he's just being pushed and pushed and pushed to the brink of mm-hmm. what he feels is okay. And, you know, he's all about the war. And, you know, basically, what does he say? Like, oh, we killed one of our own for that duchy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just interesting that Watts thinks he knows what he's doing with him. Right? Like, he thinks that he's going to break him. He doesn't believe that he has any balls to grow. That's why he says to him, it's a little late to grow a pair.
Yeah.
But between that and telling him that his daughter married the wrong brother, ouch. Yeah,
that was one of the best reveals to find out that really Kurt was the one who obviously got him into mm-hmm. it, but also that Kurt was kind of the stronger one. And the one with more guts is
kind of what it sounds like they dated before, right?
I don't know.
She married the wrong brother.
Maybe he's just saying, like, I could have given my daughter to anyone, and it should have been the stronger of the two. He's confused, but, you know, at least he's got some gumption or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you have any insight into this?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that, you know, one of my biggest treats of the season is watching the Bunker Brothers relationship.
That's great.
I think Tom and Chris are just destroying it, and yep. you know, they're both they both are actors who, you know, are able to sort of play the simmering tension. Mm-hmm. And so watching them work together, it was just so great this past season. And you know, what I thought was interesting to me was that you're looking at particularly in Chris and Calvin, because you were introduced to Bunker in the previous season as someone who's already moved away from the cause,
right?
And who's you know repentant for it, really, you know. Sure. And then becomes an officer of the law, and I just think it's such an interesting trick that in many instances you find yourself not rooting for Calvin, but at least sympathizing, at least understanding and yeah. having empathy.
On a human level, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really, I mean, that's a tough thing to do. I mean, there's a reason why so many movies, but they're like, we need to kill a lot of people, let's make them Nazis, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
No one feels bad for them. No one cares. You know, and it's just this thing where you see somebody who is kind of always been a follower, you know.
Yeah.
This is what we know of him, and is kind of finally coming into his own in this terrible way, you know.
Yeah.
Where he's breaking free of everything, you know. He's breaking free of everything. He's breaking free of family, and he's breaking free of the Brotherhood by killing Watts. He's breaking free of Proctor, and it's this sort of, it's not a liberation, it's chaos, you know.
Absolutely. But a great scene with the ice pick. Did you see that coming?
That's great.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got him, you know, telling him in the car, it could have been you or him, and don't think I didn't consider it.
Yeah.
So, like, just a nudge there. Pushes him around some more, makes him kill his friend. I guess this is why, like, what you're saying, Hoon, is that you feel some sympathy for him because he's just being knocked around. He's told that, well, I should have had my daughter marry your brother instead of you, and then just, you know, kicking him, like, sort of like metaphorically kicking him at the party in front of everybody, and then making it about money instead of their cause, and then ordering him to be like, just make me a drink. I was like, dude, there's an ice pick in that bucket for sure, and don't turn your back on this guy.
So
he's been pushed to the brink. Yeah, I saw it coming.
You saw it coming. Mm-hmm. I did not see it coming. I thought it would happen, but I did not think it would happen in that way. But I enjoyed the quick, clean, after the rest of the brutality that we've seen, I was like, thank God, just a nice pick to the neck and it's over.
Yeah, well, we didn't have to see him saw him up, I guess, which would have been more.
Well, the moment I liked about that in particular was you kind of understand later, after the ice picking, actually, you kind of understand that Calvin has transformed in a way.
And,
that happened really at the rally.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when he says, okay, you know.
Yeah, right. Stare down there.
And they have this nice shot of him kind of walking out in slow motion, and he's a different person at that point. And this is my read on it. I mean, he's a different person. And so the ice picking is a formality. you know, it was it was sort of like, well, it was going to happen either tomorrow well or the said. Day after, but he's here now.
Yeah.
And that's what's really kind of chilling to me about it. And I thought that what was great about it was, you know, the killing of Watts is very similar technically to his fantasy killing of his boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
And so there's this, the reality versus that fantasy, you see where that character, what that character has become in a way. Like, so the killing of the boss is this rage-fueled hysteria.
Right.
Know? And the killing of Watts is just so cold and
obviously his
effortless.
His, you know, the way he treats the body afterwards, we see him
looking
like to prepare to cut this body up on the tarp. But I mean, I was like, oh, you're naked, like you've done this before. It's kind of what I was thinking. Like, oh, you already have a routine down.
As we've learned from Dexter, you can't have any DNA evidence on you, which is really interesting since Eric King is in the episode too, from a Dexter.
So
but I think, you know, maybe less he's done it before, but more that he doesn't have any question about what to do, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
You know,
like
he's absolutely sure of himself at this point. And to me that was, you know, to see the contrast between that and the madman killing his boss.
Right.
That controlled killer is so much more fearful, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
You know? Yeah, I thought for a moment, because obviously they set us up with him with the fantasy killing of the boss. I thought, did he actually do it? For a minute there, I thought, maybe they're going to show it, snap back, and then it's like Banshee. Tyler comes up, and I'm like, oh, nope, that happened.
I'd like to talk about a couple other themes that have come up that we've seen through all the seasons, but are especially evident in this episode. And one is when Lucas visits Sugar after the burn down. And what does Sugar say to him? He says, I didn't think you killed that girl. You know, Lucas is like, oh, well, thanks a lot. And he says, well, how well do you ever know a man?
Right. Well, that's right. Like whole storyline. Is like, how much do we really know the guy? We don't.
But even between friends, between all that they've been through, you know, Sugar still is kind of looking at him sideways.
Sure.
Which I think is telling about the amount of damage that he's done. And the way that Sugar feels about Joe, because he says, go see him yourself. Like, grow a pair and go see him and apologize. Yeah. And we see what happens.
Well, like him being the voice of reason there to be like, you still need to go talk to the guy, which obviously that happened.
Yeah. But the same, that theme echoing where we see Hood doesn't have a place to live, right? He says he does. He goes back to the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And we have this whole flashback with Siobhan and... you know, that question that he asks, are we are who we are or do we change? Another theme that's gone on.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she, of course, says people like you, as if there is a difference. Like, who you just said, the very tiny tribe of ass kickers and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it kind of...
You know, and it's an interesting thing to have a character who, in several instances, Lucas has, you know, he talks to Brock and he says, Brock, you know me, you know I didn't do it. And Brock answers, I don't know you.
No, I don't, yeah.
And, you know, and the, you know, this is a thing where you kind of go, well, no one even knows his name.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Gary.
And so, you know, there's this sort of sense of, Gary. Right.
Yeah.
There's a sense of, you know, that in a way, when Hood comes into town at the very beginning of this, it's a town that's in turmoil and under the thumb of Proctor. It's a town kind of fighting to be good.
Hmm.
And so they kind of embrace this person that comes in and they sort of see in him what they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's a sense to me that when those themes get raised, how well do you ever know a man? It's also, you know, how well does that man ever know himself, or how well does that woman know herself?
Right.
And then the companion theme is like, and does that change? Can that change? You know?
Yeah. Great question. So
which is really in line with, like, which is really, she was saying great question, but which is really in line with Kurt's story. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I believe that he has.
Exactly. He
really
has changed.
Really changed. And, like, mm-hmm. really seeing him face off with Watts there and, like, I'm going to make it my personal mission.
Also
to come
tried
after
to
you.
Tried to snipe him.
Yeah. And he would have done it had not shown up. Yeah. And, like, yeah, you got to think a little harder than this. Also, like, your car's got the GPS in it and you're in uniform. Like, you could at least been in camo or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's that when Lucas and Sugar first meet each other, there's an immediate recognition on Sugar's part. Mm. He says, you know, he knows he's a con.
Oh, yeah.
And, takes one and to he know knows one. That he's a con. He knows that he's a con because he is a con, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And the implicit message there is that there's something that in the DNA somewhere, or in the DNA of that the experience gives you,
right.
that becomes indelible and permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to see these things as questions, you know, in Kai trying to own the town that threw him out, you know, and Carrie trying to figure out whether she is Carrie or Anna. Can she become Carrie? Can she leave Anna behind? And then ironically, out of all of these people, I feel like the reason why I felt like I got very lucky with Job is Job is a very clear character. He's very sure of himself.
Yep.
And he doesn't, you know, all of his external affect is a very superficial kind of change.
Yep.
But his core is very steady.
Right.
He's very loyal. He's very sure of himself. He knows what he knows. He's always right in his mind.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, and so this season, the question of can a person change has a different tone for him because the question is actually, can a person be changed?
Right.
Right.
And can someone force change?
All great questions. All great philosophical exercises. Hopefully we'll find out the answers come only just a few episodes away.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to... end this interview. Thank you so much for participating.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Giving us your insight.
Yeah, so great to have you again.
And we will be seeing more of you the rest of the season, I'm sure, in action.
At least part of it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Take care. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks. Now, really quick, I just want to...
talk about Brock.
Yeah, we got to talk about Brock and Agent Dawson. Okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because we've got a couple storylines here with Hood being in the center. Both of these people are asking Lucas Hood for help, which I think is hilarious.
She got immensely lucky. Because what was her plan?
She had no plan. She's high on crack.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's like her thing. But I'm just like, man, she was about to eat it. I mean, I don't know what they were going to do to her other than burn her, but it could have been even worse than that. So lucky that he's still hot on the trail here. I mean, we had that nice moment in the scene at the beginning of the episode with them in the car. And she's like, well, you're not going to back off from this or something like that. And then, like, she's right in the middle of it and just walks in there brazen, like she could take on all of them.
But that's also what he was pointing out, was like, I can spot a burnout. Like, she's being reckless.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So that was really interesting, the body mod stuff. I know we don't have much time to talk about it, but I loved the scene. I thought it was a great way to tell the story of these Satanists.
Yeah, it reminded me of like a scene from like The Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah,
you know, walking through that thing with all the weird stuff on people. I mean, not weird, totally normal if you're into that, I guess.
And then, of course, on the top of our show, when I was saying that it was Brock that was a little too late for the balls, I really felt, I mean, he is so impotent. He has a moment with a victim's, you know, sister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that calls him to action.
Right. Which, I mean, I do, I'm just try to say the thing I have for predictions about him, but I do like seeing him step up. I thought, man, you're really poking the bear there, Brock.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to be careful about what you're doing, but at the same time, his one motive, especially when he stops Kurt from killing the Nazi, nobody would have felt bad about that, but like, he's like, I don't have much left, but I want to save Banshee, and that's him. That's him through and through. Thought it was great to see, and him calling out this guy, and he's basically, you know, like shaking the sticks in the trees or whatever to try to get this animal to come out.
Right.
And then you see him talking talking to the flower shop girl, which I'll save my prediction for her as well.
It was nice to see Brock get fired up finally, and for all the right reasons. There's four dead girls, nothing like,
why haven't they done this sooner?
My sister's life could have been saved if you had been doing your job. I mean, that has got to be the worst feeling ever, for everyone involved.
Yeah,
so we I guess we're at a point. Do you feel comfortable that we can wrap it up and go into predictions?
Sure.
Okay, it's that time.
It is that time.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I'm always so sad when we get to this part of the show. I know. I'm like, I don't want to stop talking
about
this.
I don't either.
I mean, we'll keep talking about it. Yeah. But we won't talk about it on here.
Do you want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
Just don't steal my prediction.
I won't. Okay. I still predict that Deputy Cruz, there's going to be a fight between her and Carrie, especially because we didn't get to it. The boot print. I don't know what crime scene that was. I missed it the first time around.
Females, boot print, size 10. Like, that's a big foot.
Ivana's tall. You never know. Yeah. So I think that's coming. I also think Burton's going to come unhinged because he mentions that he doesn't trust Watts. He doesn't, you know, he also...
Really have to deal with Watts anymore. I thought he was going to, by the way,
kill the
carve
horse.
Up the horse in
I
front
thought
of
he
him.
Was too. Like,
oh my goodness.
So we didn't get horse carving, but we got the Amish cart carved up. So
carved
I think,
up, and then they burn their field, it looks like.
I think there's going to be more violence, but I think Burton will get a chance.
Yeah,
what do you
certainly.
I
hadn't thought about him, but I think I just lost it. I just like seeing him like brush off his coat with the Nazi, just kind of like, ugh, you guys, nah. You know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Maybe there could be a chance with that little talk between Cruz and Joe. Maybe there could be a chance because, I mean, again, like, he's still Joe and he's still very sassy with her. It was just fun to watch. Maybe there could be a chance they face off, but probably more Cruz and Carrie.
You never know. Joe could come save Carrie's behind.
That'd be great.
Right?
That'd be great. Not that she would need it because she's a tough chick.
Yeah.
But I think with the flower shop girl talking to Declan there, him talking about how special she is and she's chosen and this kind of thing, and he certainly sees himself as a deity. Ugh, gross. But I think that what he's telling her to do is make some sort of like self-sacrifice or something.
Her heart? Her still beating heart?
Yeah, maybe, but I just feel like there's got to be something where she's got to make some sort of public display.
Oh.
Some sort of like, you know, we're not going to stop or something. I don't know, just something like that. But
the face and voice of purity speaking on behalf of the devil.
Right, exactly.
I like it.
So that's why I thought, like, she's going to, she's probably going to kill herself in some gruesome way and okay. be like, yeah, that, I don't know. Okay, so we've known for a long time that Brock was supposed to die, was not supposed to survive season 1. They kept him on because Cervito's an amazing actor and really fills the role. And so I just started to think, as he's really calling this guy to task, or taking this guy to task, I thought there's a chance he could not survive the season.
Mm-hmm. Do you think anyone will survive the season?
Because
I don't.
That's the other thing, too, is like, well, we're not going to get a nice little like bow. And then the criminals went off and they lived happily. That's not going to happen on this show. That would not be the motto of this show. So I think that, but I thought, like, man, a lot of people could be messed up, but I'm starting to feel like Brock could eat it. Because, like they said, this is a little late for him to grow a pair.
Mm-hmm.
This is him putting himself directly in their eye line, their target. And I thought, oh, man, I don't want to see that. But
we shall see.
Yeah. Also, the Maggie, like, oh, man, I can see Calvin just doing something terrible to her. Because he's got to find out.
Yeah.
That's got to happen. And we have three episodes to find
Only
out.
Only three.
Only three. And so I'm like, ooh, I fear for them, the child. But that would be like one of the pure things. I hope that they survive. That's all I got here.
Well, we will find out next week what happens. Thanks for joining us, guys. You can find me on Twitter at Oriana Leo. On Instagram, on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo. I can't think today. On Instagram at Oriana Leo. Please check out my new baby, Tilt by Oriana.com, or you can find by the same name on all social media. Isaac, tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Isaac Johnson, Instagram, the Isaac Johnson. Also on social media at Cocktail Cinema, where we review movies and have drinks. It's a lot of fun.
We can't wait to catch up next time. Only 3 more episodes. See you later, guys.
Thanks, Hoon.
Oh, and shout out to Hoon for a great interview.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Fancies forever!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.